Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Kids crying, begging for their moms, their dads. This is what's happening at the border. Some 2,000 children have been taken from their families in the past 6 weeks alone. The president says the United States will not be a migrant camp. That's the politics. What about the human stories? This hour on Point, what is happening at the border? Joining me first from El Paso, Texas, is Angelo Cocherga, border correspondent for the Albuquerque Journal. Her story yesterday was headlined, Separation of Families Protested on Border. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Great to have you, Angela. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Jane.
So later this hour, we'll get to the politics of all this. We'll go to Washington for that. But I want to begin with you and what's happening on the ground. You've been reporting from the border of New Mexico and Texas and the Mexican state of Chihuahua. Describe for us what you've been seeing, Angela.
Well, that tent city where the story I featured yesterday was looking at the temporary shelter, it's being called, set up to house hundreds of children, and people showed up there on Father's Day to, there's this large outcry. We know that there are children that are being called unaccompanied minors in that temporary shelter. They're all boys at this point. The tents are air conditioned, which is good out here in the desert Southwest. The temperature later this week will be 106. And they're set up kind of, there's a mess hall, there are bunk beds. And we've seen this only through photos released by the Department of Health and Human Services. We have not been given access. A congressman from this area toured the facility. And he is a Republican, very disturbed that the children, as he put it, are being used as political pawns.
Here's NBC's Jacob Soboroff, who's one of the first journalists invited inside the country's largest detention facility for migrant children, this one in Brownsville, Texas. He tweeted that, quote, this place is called a shelter, but these kids are incarcerated, end quote. On Thursday, he described the scene on the Today Show.
We saw a facility pushed to capacity. Crammed bedrooms, kids in line for food. The kids here don't get out much, spending almost 22 hours a day indoors. They also don't talk with their parents very much either. And we were told cases of psychological distress is also something they see here, with some of the kids being medicated for mental health issues without their parents even knowing it.
So who are the caretakers, Angela? Who's taking care of these kids? Are they contract workers? Are they HHS workers? Who are they?
Well, that's a big question. I've been asking HHS and cannot get answers. We don't know who's caring for the children. There are constantly job postings for these positions, and we've seen Southwest Key is one of the organizations that takes over the care of children. Now, they're all being called, it's important to note, unaccompanied minors, but up until very recently, unaccompanied minors were children who showed up at the border on their own. Now, any child, and that's all the children who are being separated from their parents, are being called unaccompanied minors and treated as if they don't have a parent, don't have a guardian. And so all the decisions about their care are being made by the federal government. And again, these children, most are very young. Many, even the older ones, don't know how to reach their parents. And there's been a lot of misinformation for parents about how to track down their children. The other thing to note is that I've been reporting on the separation of families at the border since March. The government, federal government, Department of Homeland Security said this is not our policy. We later learned that this area, El Paso, was indeed a pilot program before the zero tolerance policy was put into effect. So this has been happening. The problem is they had no preparation for the capacity. The reason we have a tent city out in our area is because they've run out of room in these shelters. And of course, the photos that are being released have created an even larger outcry from the public, because they do look like, as somebody put it, cages or even dog kennels.
So we're hearing stories about a lot of confusion, parents looking for their children. You talked about the misinformation. Sort of what's the sense of what you're seeing? Is this an orderly operation, or is there a lot of confusion about, you know, kids and who they belong to and where they're going?
Well, there seems to be mass confusion and unintended consequences from this policy. When you take away the children, what are the next steps? They could barely handle the children who are already being cared for by the Department of Health and Human Services. Now you've got this whole new group, some very, very young children. The other question, they're separating children from parents, but often they're separated by gender. So if a brother and sister come with their parent, their mother or father, they too are likely to be separated. So even creating more heartache for the children who are caught up in all of this back and forth about the policy. One other thing that's created confusion, again, we heard the Secretary of Homeland Security saying people who want to seek asylum can show up at the ports of entry, at the border crossings, legally request that. We have been seeing for weeks border agents standing in the middle of the international bridge where the U.S. part begins and turning people back, saying we're out of room, we're out of space, we can't take you in. So don't come. Hmm. Now, she said they would not be locked up and separated from their kids, so space should not be an issue, but they're being turned back. And I have talked to a lawyer. Some of those who are able to cross are indeed being separated from their children and locked up themselves, even though they're seeking asylum.
What impact is this having on the court system there, Angela?
It's overwhelmed, and it has been for quite a while. There's a huge backlog, and you have these mass court hearings where you've got people in jumpsuits crowded in there and their cases are decided in a matter of a few weeks. Now it's unclear. Now, there are more prosecutors being devoted to this region because of the zero tolerance and because everyone's being criminally prosecuted, but it's still a huge backlog. And so it's taking forever. And the goal is to expedite this and get people in and out, deter them, deport them. And then the question is, if you deport the parent, what happens to the child?
Angela Kocherka is the border correspondent for the Albuquerque Journal. Angela, thank you for your excellent reporting and for being with us today.
Thank you, Jane.
Joining me now from Houston, Texas, is Cardinal Daniel N. DiNardo, the Archbishop of Galveston, Houston. He's president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. He issued a statement at the group's General Assembly condemning the Trump administration's policy of separating families and its stricter asylum policies. You can link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. Cardinal DiNardo, great to have you with us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Jane. It is good to be here.
Well, why did you decide, Cardinal, to release this statement condemning the Trump administration's zero tolerance policy separating parents from their children?
Well, what had happened is we have been working on the immigration issues for years. In recent months, we've become concerned as the zero tolerance policy came more intensely into view and action. The chair of our Committee on Immigration, Bishop Joe Vasquez of Austin, had already made a statement. So in preparing for the meeting, I thought it was important, after talking to a few of the bishop committees, that I say something. So I decided to say something right at the beginning of the meeting to clarify for us and for everyone that this is where we stand. I issued a statement of two paragraphs, both related, although not exactly the same, mm-hmm. one on those seeking asylum and then, of course, the second one on the question of the zero tolerance policy of the administration.
So let me read from that, Cardinal. You write, "Our government has the discretion to ensure that young children are not separated from their parents and exposed to irreparable harm and trauma. Separating babies from their mothers is not the answer and is immoral." The Trump administration says these parents can avoid having their children taken away from them simply by not crossing the border illegally. Isn't that valid? Isn't that their prerogative?
There is a validity in that, but more important is the humaneness of what we do, because we are welcoming people. From our point of view, religiously, as leaders, we don't use children and separate them from their parents and use them somewhat as a weapon against their parents. So from our point of view, much more important than that particular law or policy is the way we treat children. And in this case, we're treating them in such a way that, as I just heard a report, they get to these centers, you know, and there's a trauma for them there. There's no reason why families have to be separated in this way. We have in the past have had questions of or programs of family case management where the children need not leave their parents who are subject to deportation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really opposed to it on really the greater grounds of the meaning of the human person.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions stirred up controversy when he used a Bible verse to defend the policy that is causing families to be separated at the border. Here's that.
If you violate the law, you subject yourself to prosecution. And I would cite you to the Apostle Paul and his clear and wise command in Romans 13 to obey the laws of the government, because God has ordained the government for his purposes.
Cardinal DiNardo, I'm curious your reaction to the Attorney General citing the Bible and specifically the Apostle Paul, Romans 13, to defend this immigration policy.
Yes, in general, the quoting the scriptures is okay by me, but you should always quote it in context. Surrounding that particular passage is, owe nothing to any man except to love one another. In the paragraph before, in Paul's letter to the Romans, the end of chapter 12, he says, practice hospitality. To my mind, there are gradations in law. I think in this case, the hospitality and the love we show, and I would add, even beyond scriptures, even the normal hospitality and welcoming that the United States has always shown would overpower that particular part of Romans. It's certainly true that we obey the law, but some laws maybe are bad and need to be tossed out. This is a policy that strikes me as ineffective and does not work, and I do not think it's totally faithful to the whole impress of the New Testament on the meaning of our respect for the human person.
I have about 30 seconds before the break, Cardinal. One of your Catholic bishops, Edward Weissenberger of Tucson, raised the possibility of implementing canonical penalties for any Catholic involved in this at the border. Is that something you support, Cardinal?
It would be something I'd favor to study. I think it's pretty complicated. Our corrections and penalties are meant to be medicinal, and we'd have to look into this and see to what extent, you know, only a local bishop would be able to do it. At this time, I have to tell you, I'm somewhat reserved about bringing in penalties right away.
Cardinal Daniel DiNardo, stick with me for just a moment. The Cardinal issued a statement condemning the president's separation of families at the border. We'll continue our conversation with him after the break. We're looking at the human faces and the moral questions surrounding zero tolerance at the southern border. And you can join the conversation. Is this a moral crisis? Is this a health crisis? What is the right thing to do here? We'll continue with Cardinal DiNardo after the break. Also, Dr. Colleen Kraft, president of the American Academy of Pediatrics, will join us. She has visited a shelter in Texas, and we'll ask her about it. Much more after this break, including your calls. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
The news can feel like an echo chamber. You listen to podcasts to get that perspective shift. So travel with NPR's Rough Translation. Follow familiar conversations in unfamiliar parts of the world and get a new perspective on home. Rough Translation. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about immigrant families being torn apart at the border this hour, and you can join the conversation. Do you see this as a mother, as a father? What lens are you seeing all of this through? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. I'm speaking with Cardinal Daniel N. DiNardo, the Archbishop of Galveston, Houston, also the president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Cardinal, I wanted to play this clip. This is President Trump yesterday, saying that people should be allowed into the country based on merit, repeating his assertion that illegal aliens cause death and destruction.
They're people that came on merit, not based on a lottery or not people that snuck across the border. And they could be murderers and thieves and so much else.
Cardinal, as a man of faith, I'm curious your reaction to that.
I'm sure within any group you can find certain members of that ilk. Simultaneously with the vast majority of those who come, immigrants, and I think years and years ago, my own father from Italy, I would say they come wanting to work, wanting to contribute. They are, in many cases, members of our parishes. They have leadership. They are raising families. So I would not agree outright with that kind of a statement, since I think it's just too limited.
Cardinal, Attorney General Jeff Sessions has said that the fear of domestic violence is not grounds now for seeking asylum in the United States. In addition to being critical of the zero tolerance policy, you've been also critical of that. Would you explain why, please?
Because, we're a country that welcomes. Asylum is an instrument to preserve the welcome and the right to life. Domestic violence in the home country is an extreme danger. Women are already vulnerable. To have them come over here and rightfully see this as an important dimension of their seeking asylum, and to have that rejected outright when it has been used many times before, to my mind, again, it's too stringent. It lays aside our vast tradition of America of welcoming people, particularly those who are subject to violence.
The Attorney General says that asylum claims have been expanded too broadly, taken advantage of in many cases. Isn't that possible?
It's certainly possible, but I myself do not know that they've been so expanded that they have lost their right and they have lost their vigor. I think they are still in play.
Do you think the Catholic Church, Cardinal, has leverage with this president to change his mind on this issue?
I certainly hope so. I'd certainly like to keep up the discussion going. I certainly want to include Congress, since they do play a role in some of these things. But it remains to be seen if our constant speaking of this, dealing with this, and I would suggest of other people of my faith or no faith, but who are concerned about this issue, would also continue to speak up and just simply make it known to the White House.
Lastly, as I know you have to go, Cardinal, the Washington Post has reported that President Trump's Faith Advisory Council is made up entirely of evangelicals. And I'm curious your reaction to that, whether there should be more religious diversity represented there.
Well, I'm always, Jane, I'm always interested in religious diversity,
mm-hmm.
and I have no problem with evangelicals. I think that it probably would be prudent if there were enough different points of view that would produce a good, even animated discussion. So from my point of view, bring more on to allow the issue to be addressed, and I think more wisely and prudently when there's a greater variety.
Cardinal Daniel N. DiNardo, Archbishop of Galveston, Houston, is president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Cardinal, thank you very much for taking the time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Jane.
Joining me now via Skype from Los Angeles is Dr. Colleen Kraft, the president of the American Academy of Pediatrics. She was inside a shelter run by the Office of Refugee Resettlement along the Texas border with Mexico. Dr. Kraft, great to have you with us.
Thank you, Jane.
Will you describe for us what you saw in that shelter that you visited?
So I visited this shelter back in April of 2018, and this was a shelter that had been designed for very young children, so kids 12 years of age and under. And when I walked in, the shelter itself had kind of a homey feel to it. So there were cribs and there were beds and there were toys and books, but there were no parents. And so we walked into the toddler room. And in the toddler room, you know, you normally expect rooms full of toddlers to be rambunctious and loud and laughing and playing and things going on. It was eerily quiet. The children in that room were playing and keeping to themselves for the most part, except for one little girl who was not any more than 2 years of age, who was just in the middle of the room on the playmat, sobbing, wailing, beating her little fists on the mat. And next to her was an Office of Refugee Resettlement shelter worker who was trying to give her a toy or a book, but wasn't allowed to hold her, wasn't allowed to pick her up. And we all just felt so devastated because we knew what she needed, and that was her mother, and we couldn't get that for her.
So is that the policy then of the workers who are taking care of these children, not to touch them, not to hold them, not to pick them up? These are children, they're toddlers, right? Some of them still in diapers?
Yes. Now, they're allowed to change diapers, obviously, but mm-hmm. but what we understood was the policy was that they were not allowed to pick them up, hold them, cuddle them, comfort them.
And so What's the impact of that? What are the short-term, the long-term physical, emotional challenges, impacts of young children in this sort of situation, being separated from their parents, from their caregivers in this sort of environment?
The foundational relationship of that parent and child, the trust that happens from that newborn baby all the way through those early years, is what sets the stage for ongoing development and the development of speech, language, gross motor function, learning, loving. And when that's taken away from these kids, what happens is their stress response system goes into overdrive. So the normal fight or flight chemicals that we have in our body that keep us from danger go into overdrive with these kids, and they are on red alert all the time. So they don't know what to do, and they're not verbal, so they can't really tell you. And what happens in the short term is that these chemicals disrupt the brain architecture and disrupt that child's ability to speak and to walk and to progress and to have any type of social-emotional bonding. So these kids go on to develop what we call reactive attachment disorder, where they have a difficult time attaching to the next adult who may want to be kind to them.
I know you're a physician, pediatrician. You're looking at this from a medical perspective, but you have called President Trump's zero-tolerance policy of separating these children from their parents child abuse. Those are tough words. Tell me about why this constitutes child abuse.
Those are very tough words. And the impact on these children, what we are doing to inflict this damage and developmental delay on them, really meets the criteria for child abuse. What these children need right now is to be back with their parents. They need that buffer so that we can help to heal some of the wounds that have been caused by separating them from the one person that can actually help them navigate through the trauma that they've been experiencing.
The Trump administration says, you know, those parents can't avoid having their children go through this trauma by simply not crossing the border illegally. Then they won't have their children taken away. Isn't that valid? Isn't that reasonable? What's your response?
We've heard from parents as well who have come to the border checkpoint to present themselves for asylum, and their children are being taken away too. So this is, it's a really untenable situation for these families. They are leaving unspeakable violence, and nobody leaves their home easily. So these parents are leaving their home, they're fleeing violence, they are the only buffer for those children during that long journey through Mexico. And they come to our country, whether it is through a border checkpoint or crossing the border illegally, and the first thing that we do to their children is take them away. So we're causing more injury on top of the trauma they've already experienced.
We heard from the reporter at the top that people arriving at U.S. ports asking for asylum are being turned away, are being turned back. And now you're saying that some of these children whose parents are coming asking for asylum, their children are simply being removed from them. I just want to make sure I heard that correctly. Is that right?
That is correct.
We get some calls in here. Patricia is on the line from Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Patricia. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I am just so upset about all this. It is unjust. And the people are coming as a result of our past violent foreign policies. The war we funded in Guatemala, 36 years. The war we funded in El Salvador, 12 years. And the terrorism that we allowed to happen in Honduras, these people came up in the last century as refugees. Many settled in Southern California, where they were in poor neighborhoods occupied by the existing U.S.-born gangs. Mm-hmm. This is where they learned this violence. I was in El Salvador. I've been working in Central America for 29 years. I was there in the 90s when these deported gang members came back with their culture.
And what do you think about these children today, Patricia, when you see these faces, when you hear the cries? What goes through your mind?
They're coming for their lives. They are running for their lives, and they should not be punished. They want to survive. The parents want to survive. Mm-hmm. They have a right to survival. That's a God-given human right.
Patricia, thank you so much for the call there from Baltimore. Let me get another in. Stanley in Taunton, Massachusetts. Hi, Stanley. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Hi, Jane. How are you today?
I am well. Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Yes. As a 22-year-old male, I'm just looking at everything as a parent, not a parent, but looking at their perspective. It's sad. And also the children, it's just heartbreaking, even seeing the images and the video. But what I wanted to tell you is that these children, due to the fact that they're exposed to such a dilemma like this at a very young age, will be very traumatizing, yes. But do know, this will, and I'll say this again, this will bite the United States in the behind, due to the fact that these kids will never forget and use that anger that has been built up over the last 3 weeks or how long they've been detained for the rest of their lives. And this may be somewhat of a national security problem due to the fact that they might one day retaliate against
you. You see the long-term ramifications here, Stanley. Thank you very much for those thoughts. A lot of listener response on our website. One listener says, purely from a child's point of view, they are being punished when they've done nothing wrong. The little one's removal from their parents and guardians is inhumane and cruel. The innocent young are being collected as pawns by the Trump government to be used as trading tokens for his political whims. Another listener, Sebastian, says, so much disinformation and political posturing. Pathetic. Trump did not create the loopholes in our immigration system. He did not market these loopholes to use children to take advantage of our system. Dr. Colleen Kraft, you're a pediatrician. You've been in these centers. I'm curious, just from a not just a medical doctor perspective, but as a mother, take off your pediatrician hat for a moment. What would you say about your experience with these children at the border as a mother?
As a mother, I couldn't even imagine being separated from my children and not knowing where they are. And the trauma that that would cause me personally as a mother would be overwhelming. Much less thinking about what would happen with my kids when they were that age and that young, and their brains were just actively developing. So I would want to see this policy reversed, and then we need to have a bigger conversation about what to do with our families.
Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen yesterday said, quote, parents who enter this country illegally are by definition criminals. By entering our country illegally, often in dangerous circumstances, illegal immigrants have put their children at risk. I know you're not in the politics of all this, but do you see a moral test for us, for this president, for the administration, for our country, broadly speaking, Dr. Kraft?
I'm going to quote my good friend and former AAP president, Dr. Fernando Stein, who says, children do not immigrate, they flee. And these families flee. And I think that the conversations need to be to humanize these children and humanize these families and understand what they are running from. And bring that into the whole conversation about how we navigate our issues with the border.
Let me get Susan in here from Bloomington, Illinois. Hi, Susan. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. My concern, like Dr. Kraft, is that I think it's morally, I'm a Presbyterian minister, I'm a social worker, I also teach comparative religions, and I find it morally repugnant that we are harming children with this separation. And I guess my question is, having studied the laws of this land in terms of child welfare, and having worked in orphanages in other countries, is that we have laws to prevent abuse and neglect. And are we okay as a country to do this kind of harm to children? Because it is harm. It is long-term harm and damage that we're doing to the kids. And I also, as a Presbyterian minister, find it very difficult when, and teaching comparative religions, when you pull from scripture out of context and you use that to justify a law like we've seen that's happened. But my main question is, are we okay as a country to do this kind of harm to children? Because my understanding is that we are not okay with that, that we protect the vulnerable.
Susan, thank you very much. Let me get one more in here. Gabriel in Columbia, Missouri. Hi, Gabriel.
Hi, Jan. The previous caller had a lot of things I wanted to say, but I want to say two things real quick. I worked in homeless services for 4 years, and separating families was a last resort thing. And even when we did that, children that went into the children's shelters had the ability to see their parents whenever, 24/7. They had the ability to see them, and even then, we saw a decline in verbal skills and even physical growth. So this is a huge impact, even if just for a few hours. Hmm.
Gabriel, thank you very much. Dr. Colleen Kraft, president of the American Academy of Pediatrics, we've got about 30 seconds here. Leave us with your final thoughts. You visited this shelter on the Texas border. You saw these children separated from their parents. What would you like us to know as a country about your experience there?
I would like everyone to know that children develop and grow in the context of a loving relationship with an adult, with their parents. And the first thing that we need to do is bring our parents and children back together. Before we have any other conversations, let's do the right thing and help these children heal by reuniting them with their parents.
Dr. Colleen Kraft, president of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Dr. Kraft, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
After the break, we'll talk through the politics of all this with a congressional reporter from Politico, Rachel Bade. You can join the conversation, listeners. Are you with the president on this one? Is this the only way to really deter illegal immigration? What's your message for your lawmaker? I'm Jane Clayson. There is more after this break. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of How I Built This. And on our latest episode, how Chip Wilson turned workout clothes into a fashion statement. And along the way, built a breakout brand, Lululemon, now worth billions. You can listen to How I Built This on Apple Podcasts or however you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about President Trump's zero tolerance policy this hour, which is separating families at the border. And you can join the conversation. Is the president using these children as pawns to get the Democrats to fund his border wall? Are you with him? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. After calling the United States immigration policy the fault of the Democrats yesterday, President Trump said our policy is the worst of any nation.
We have the worst immigration laws in the entire world. Nobody has such sad, such bad, and actually in many cases, such horrible and tough. You see about child separation. You see what's going on there.
And yesterday, Secretary of Homeland Security Kirstjen Nielsen repeatedly blamed Congress for the crisis at the border.
It's a law passed by the United States Congress. Rather than fixing the law, Congress is axing those of us who enforce the law to turn our backs on the law and not enforce the law. It's not an answer.
And here's Attorney General Jeff Sessions speaking to the National Sheriffs Association yesterday, saying that America has a choice to make in this immigration debate.
There's an important conversation occurring in this country about whether we want to be a country of laws or whether we want to be a country without borders.
Joining me now from Washington is Rachel Bade, congressional reporter for Politico. Her story yesterday was headlined, The Republicans' New Katrina, GOP Fears Backlash to Splitting Families. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Rachel, great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Jane.
So President Trump is blaming Democrats for this circumstance, for this situation. He says they should step up, look at immigration seriously. He's essentially making clear that any legislation addressing family separation must also include some of his priorities, right? Funding the wall, number one on the list. Is that an accurate assessment of what's going on at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing the White House, and including the Homeland Security Department, try to put the blame right now on Capitol Hill and say that Democrats are the ones that should have changed this policy a long time ago. Well, guess what? They can end it now if they want to. It's easy for them to just point the finger, and clearly they're feeling some heat right now and are trying to sort of change the narrative, which I think is interesting because just a few weeks ago we heard Chief of Staff John Kelly sort of make the case for this, saying that this was a deterrent, a way to keep undocumented immigrants from coming to the United States because they don't want to lose their kids. And so now we're seeing them sort of try to shift blame elsewhere, but it's not entirely accurate, right? I think just to start, we should go back to the genesis of all this. Republicans have said for for a long time that they want to end what's known as catch and release. And that's basically this policy where border agents for a long time, when they intercept an undocumented family with kids, release them into the United States and give them a future court date to come adjudicate their cases. Well, Republicans have long said that that system was abused and that people would just disappear in the country and not show up for their court dates. And so Republicans have talked about ending catch and release. The president went ahead and did it himself without legislation, only they didn't anticipate sort of what happened here, which is that in keeping people and not releasing them and holding them in detention facilities, they were not allowed to keep the children. And so basically there was a federal court case that said you can't hold a child for several days at a time. And so you have this policy where kids are being separated from parents. At the same time, Trump wants his border wall, right? He mm-hmm. wants to cut immigration. He wants to crack down on illegal immigration. And so he sees what's happening here and the outrage and thinks he can maybe get something he wants for a fix on this.
So what's the Democrats' response to this? I'm not hearing the Democrats stepping up here as much. Are you?
You know, they're down at the border right now. A lot of members over the weekend went down there to look at these facilities, and they're certainly expressing outrage here. But the issue here is they don't really have control. Democrats can't make the Republican-controlled White House and the Republican-controlled Congress do anything. It's really up to Republicans. And so right now on Capitol Hill, there's a lot of Republicans, including GOP leaders like Speaker Paul Ryan, who say they're not comfortable with this policy of separating kids and families. And they are starting to sort of express these feelings. However, their solution to this isn't to blast the president and say, Mr. President, stop this policy now. Their solution is to come up with something internally and blame the courts, which is not entirely fair. And so right now in the House, they are putting together a proposal that basically keeps families together at the border. But the problem here is it basically makes it so that kids can be held indefinitely in mm-hmm. detention facilities. And that is it's already creating problem with some moderate Republicans, including Will Hurd, who has a third of the U.S.-Mexico border in his district. He has
right.
sort of pushed back
right.
on this thing. It doesn't fix the problem.
Here's the president at a meeting at the National Space Council yesterday. He said that America's current immigration policy is the fault of Democrats and that they are obstructing progress.
Immigration is the fault and all of the problems that we're having because we cannot get them to sign legislation. We cannot get them even to the negotiating table. And I say it's very strongly the Democrats' fault.
But when it comes to the zero tolerance policy and separating families, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham told CNN that President Trump could end this policy fairly easily. His statement was in stark contrast with information pushed by the White House this week.
President Trump could stop this policy with a phone call.
He doesn't seem to acknowledge that.
Well, he can't. I'll go tell him. If you don't like families being separated, you can tell DHS stop doing it.
Let me get some calls in here, Rachel Bade. Here's Troy first in Iowa City, Iowa. Hi, Troy. Welcome to the program.
Well, hi, Gene. I do have a couple questions. Where were you guys when Obama was doing the exact same thing? Where were you guys when they weren't letting the congressmen visit the Obama child camps? And those kids had scabies, measles, mumps, and everything else. And they actually sent those kids after being in those camps and caught all those diseases throughout the whole United States, and they infected other Americans.
Well, we're not sure about that, Troy. What about this, though, Rachel? Did this ever happen in the Obama administration?
Not that I'm aware of, and I'll be the first to tell you that I'm a Capitol Hill reporter and a political person on this, but what I have seen is some statistics showing that over the past couple of weeks, this has happened like 2,000 times. We haven't seen these sorts of statistics where kids are taken from their parents in the Obama administration. Now, again, that goes back to this catch and release policy, right? That's because for, you know, the past few decades or whatever, the policy has been if you have a kid and you come to the border and you're an undocumented immigrant, you're given a court date and you're released into the country and you're supposed to show up to adjudicate that case. But oftentimes, like Republicans say, people don't show up and they sort of disappear. But that often kept families from being separated, at the very least.
Let me get Jim in here from Spencer, Iowa. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Yeah, these people are being used as, you know, bargaining ploys for this mistaken wall promise. I think it's very disingenuous for the administration to, you know, cite the Bible and, you know, laws that are the fault of others when we have countless examples of employers who have encouraged illegals to come in and work under the table. We're not going after them. That's the law. I don't see why you have to use children as an example of how we're, our hands are tied. There's nothing we can do about it. Well, yeah, there is. There's plenty you could do about it. You could start restricting people from employing these people in the first place.
Jim, thanks so much for the call. We're hearing that a lot, that these children are being used as political pawns, Rachel Bade. I just want to clarify one thing. The president calls on Congress to change the law here. There is no law that requires a child to be removed from their parents at the border. This is an administration policy. Is that not correct?
That is 100% correct. Okay. Congress can do something to force the administration to keep people together in terms of passing an additional law, but no, there's no law that says they can't keep people together right now. I did want to respond to the caller and this sort of notion of using kids as bargaining chips. We have seen the president have this sort of tough love approach before, right? When he said he wanted to deal with Dreamers with heart and find a solution for them. But then he stopped DACA and basically ended this program that gave young undocumented immigrants who came to the country as kids and who have known no other country threw their futures totally into chaos. He thinks he has the high ground here in terms of forcing Democrats to give him what he wants. But we're seeing right now that public opinion is on the Democratic side. People are by a landslide, do not like this policy.
Well, a lot of Republicans do, though, don't they?
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true. I saw stats about 65% of Americans in general do not support this. But yes, you're right, about 55% of Republicans do. What is interesting about that is that I'm not hearing a lot of support from Republican leaders on the Hill saying this is a good idea. In fact, I haven't even heard of one. So we'll have to watch that.
Let me get Bruce in here from Sparta, Tennessee. Hi, Bruce. Welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Jane.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Jane. I appreciate it. Actually, there are no leaders in Congress at this point, and there's no leader and no president. There's a schoolyard bully who's trying to make sure that he can put another star on his list of things that he's accomplished, which were platitudes. The whole system is designed around the political issue. The true Democrats and true Republicans, if they had a chance to vote in the Congress, would vote overwhelmingly to go back to the principles the country stands for instead of the things that keep us apart. We have fundamentalist clans, we have gun clans, we have racist clans, and they're all being manipulated into fighting one another instead of solving the problems like Americans would if we had a real president who wanted to lead us instead of place blame on somebody in the past for something that wasn't identified until it popped up as a problem.
Bruce, thank you very much for the call. In the president's defense, he says the borders must be secured, and there has to be a way to do that. Rachel Bade, so the president plans a meeting with House Republicans today in advance of votes on immigration legislation. There are a couple of competing bills headed to the floor. What are you expecting to see?
So tonight, senior Republicans and administration officials, we're expecting the president to throw his support behind these immigration bills. Basically, these are both bills that deal with the DACA situation. One of them is a hardcore conservative proposal that cracks down on immigration and goes even further than what the president proposed to solve DACA a few months ago. And it is so conservative that it will not pass because a bunch of moderate Republicans will not vote for it. The other is what's known as they're calling the compromise bill or the moderate bill. And basically it is the product of weeks of negotiations between moderate Republicans from swing districts with large Hispanic populations and the far right. It includes a pathway to citizenship, which is a huge deal for conservatives who have long said that that is amnesty. And moderates in return have agreed to basically curb legal immigration and increase border security in ways that they have not in the past.
How are Republicans feeling about the wall?
So Republicans have long sort of resigned with the fact that the Trump wants his wall, and a lot of them do not think it's the best policy choice. They think that there's a better way to use $25 billion in terms of enforcement agents, technology at the border. But the president has been calling for this continuously since he was inaugurated. And so they have basically decided they're going to have to give him this to get anything passed. The bill, the compromise bill that will be on the floor this week that the president is going to push for tonight includes $25 billion for that wall.
Let me get Kim in here from Portland, Maine. Hi, Kim. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Thank you. Yes, I'm questioning about, I believe it's that compromise bill. Angus King, one of my senators, I believe is for it.
Mm-hmm.
Susan Collins, who has proven herself to be a pretty respectable moderate. Yeah, and I've kind of trusted her, even though I'm not a Republican. It was something about not being able to pursue criminal or illegal immigrants within a 100-mile radius. So I'm trying to get a sense of why she's not for this bill. I thought I'd ask you guys.
Kim, thanks. Rachel, do you know quickly?
Yeah, there's a lot of immigration proposals, and it's easy to get confused. The one you're mentioning about not being able to pick up people 100 miles from the border, that's actually a Democrat proposal in the Senate, and it won't pass because Republicans won't back that. They say they need to be able to intercept people. The compromise bill in the House, to be clear, is a Republican bill that not a single Democrat will ever vote for. It includes a lot of hardcore red meat policy issues that make a lot of Democrats uncomfortable, including cutting people off from being able to sponsor family members to bring them to the United States if they're legal immigrants here.
Kim, thanks so much for the call. One more here, Sean in Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Sean. Glad you called.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
First, real quick, this conversation has made me call my senator, and I think that all your listeners should definitely do that and voice their opinion, because that's the only way we can ever make anything change. And my real point is, the caller, Rachel, is I think this brings up a pretty interesting separation of powers issue, because it really shows how much power the executive branch has nowadays. You know, the immigration courts and the immigration system is under the Department of Justice. And so it's very difficult when you have the person who is enforcing the law also adjudicating the laws. That's why they can make these policy changes, even though they don't admit that it's a policy change. But it all resides under the one branch of government. So I think this really shows us as Americans, like, do we really want a strong executive, and really should Congress take back the power that was given to them by the Constitution? Mm. So just want to hear your thoughts on that.
Good, Sean. Thank you. Wrap us up on that point, Rachel Bade.
What I would say on that is that Congress does have power, and they can act. They just can't get on the same page, and that immigration has long been a policy issue that divides not just Democrats and Republicans, but moderate Republicans and conservative Republicans, and it is one of the most contentious issues there is. So trying to pass something is proving impossible, which really empowers Trump and the administration to do what they want. I think to sort of spin this forward, it will be interesting to watch if this becomes the summer of immigration. You know, Republicans are facing a really tough midterm election this fall, and they wanted to talk about their tax cuts. They wanted to talk about the booming stock market. Now, because of what the administration is doing, they're talking about kids in cages. This is really tough politically, and it could really hurt their messaging going forward and might empower Democrats in the future.
Rachel Bade, congressional reporter for Politico, really appreciate your insights, bringing them to us today. Rachel, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jane.
Listeners, thank you for your excellent calls and questions. You can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.